The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Barton Simmons. I'm Chip Patterson, and our Win Total Series, our award-winning Win Total Series. And the award is just something I printed on Microsoft Publisher for you, Barton.
You're not going to be your own biggest fan. Who is?
We've arrived at the SEC West. It is the conclusion, at least for the Power Five conferences. Make sure that you subscribe to the Cover 3 Podcast. If for some reason this is the first time that you are listening to this, because you can get all of our previous Win Total Series, and you will be dialed in when our Notre Dame Group of Five and the Camp Buzz series kicks off here at the end of the week. So, Barton, with so much to dig into with the SEC West, I really don't want to waste any time at all. The question is, are you ready to count them up?
Count them up!
As much as I think it's the under count is a safe up. Play, like, I can't even...
Count them up! Count them up! How many games are going to win this fall?
I can't fathom who wins.
How many games are going to win this fall?
I just can't. I don't see it. It's not on there. It's not the schedule I'm looking at. Unless there's another schedule somewhere.
And the SEC West, we begin with the Alabama Crimson Tide. Would you know it, Barton? The Alabama Crimson Tide have the highest win total in the SEC West. Now, we talk about Alabama all the time, but I don't think that we spend a lot of time really digging into sort of the potential pitfalls of the schedule, because I do think it's important to remind the listening audience that this is a team that, while they do not lose often in the regular season, they do lose in the regular season. In 2017, it was the Iron Bowl against Auburn. In 2015, it was against Ole Miss. In 2014, it was against Ole Miss. So championship-winning teams still can take L's under Nick Saban. So the over-under win total is set at 11 for the Crimson Tide. What's your pick?
Well, here's the nice thing about this year's Alabama team, and as a response to what you just said, is because the non-conference schedule doesn't really present a challenge. No, all respect to the Duke Blue Devils. There's, as I see it, three, maybe four games that are losable.
What's your fourth?
Well, the three are at Texas A&M.
Right.
LSU.
Yep.
And at Auburn.
Yep.
The fourth is on the three and a half, the, like, on the right day, right circumstances, but like at Mississippi State, I think is not one that should be taken lightly. If somehow the Joe Moorhead offense clicks, and if somehow, and you know, Bob Shoop, I know they had three first rounders last year on that defense, but you know, they played Alabama as well as anybody defensively in Tuscaloosa last year. So anyways, my point is, because there's only four at most losable games, they are easier to sort of rally the troops for, circle the wagons, dial in, and put together your best performance. It's sort of the reverse of, you know, a target on your chest every week, and you know, you're getting everyone's best shot. You can really tool up and give those four teams your best shot. So that side of it, I'm sort of is a positive for the over. I'm not even going to talk about offense. My concern, if there is one, is the defense, which is weird. Like, it's a weird place to be in sort of analyzing an Alabama team. We saw a little bit of last year. I mean, offense was obviously the strength. Defense was a little bit uncharacteristically soft. I don't mean that in like it wasn't a soft defense, but it was softer than we're used to seeing.
Sure.
And yet it was still one of the best in the country. So the bar we're comparing it to at Alabama is so high. But this year, once again, you got to be a little bit concerned about depth at linebacker, inside and outside. Yabi Anoma transfers to Houston after getting dismissed with, I don't know what the deal was there, but it sounds like he was dismissed from the school. It's, you know, they've got to find pass rushers, and they got to find depth on the inside alongside Dylan Moses. And that just makes me that gives me a little bit of pause. But I still think when you go and look on the other side of the ball, there's just too much firepower, and there's too much motivation, and there's too much focus from this team, given the way it went out last year, to not feel like this is going to be a really good version of one of Nick Saban's most talented rosters.
I think that this Alabama team, if it was totally unleashed, can probably score 42 points a game. I think that this Alabama team, if it's totally unleashed, could look like, and we saw this a little bit last year where, you know, you just sort of watch an Alabama team. If you were to change the jerseys, change the helmets, you could be like, wow, this is a Big 12 offense. You know, the speed at which they were playing, the formations that they were running, it was just so far from when we saw Derrick Henry run into his interior offensive lineman's butts for 4 yards upfield every single time. It had all of the looks of an evolution. And I am fascinated to see, as we've got Sark back, right?
We have Sark back.
Yeah. So I'm kind of fascinated to see, and, you know, we got Charles Kelly back on defense, and, you know, we got Sal Sinceri's back. Like, the coach getting the band back together for me is the number one intrigue point that could potentially become concern. It might not be concern. It might be that, you know, Nick Saban is still able to get as much efficiency as he wants, but, you know, does that mean that we see a little bit of a shift? You know, you and I are looking here on paper at the Alabama offense, and I don't want to speak for you on this one, but I'm kind of thinking about it almost like a video game style, or like I've got the best fantasy football team if college fantasy football was a thing that a lot of people did, that I would be locked and loaded with ridiculous skill position talent that can get me points every single week. But, you know, you mentioned there are, on the personnel side, on the defensive, on the interior part of the defensive side of the ball, you've got a couple issues. And, you know, I'm just very curious to see how sort of the inner workings, the game planning, the way that this new retooled staff uses and coaches up the players that are on this roster, because clearly we're dealing with an Alabama team that can go win a national championship. And clearly we're dealing with an Alabama team where the floor is probably, you know, just one regular season loss. But as I look at it, at 11, I think I'm still going like over, or push to over.
Oh yeah, I'm still going over. I'm still and I think, I mean, at Jordan Hare, I mean, that's scary. you know, that tail end of the season, like those are some scary moments. But I think you still, if you're placing a bet, what's more likely? I think 12-0 is more likely than 11-1 with this roster. Think about this too. 2017 Alabama recruiting class, the best recruiting class of Nick Saban's tenure of number one recruiting classes, the best recruiting class in, according to our 24/7 sports rankings since 2010, the University of Florida. This is a 2017 class that's now all juniors. And I mean, that talent is, you know, they're starting left and right tackles are those guys. Their entire starting receiving core, starting running back, starting quarterback. Now these guys have come up and they're, you know, Dylan Moses starting a middle linebacker. LeBron Ray will be a starting defensive end. You know, that Xavier McKinney starting at safety, like that class is fully coming of age to where I just think that I would imagine there's really good leadership. I would imagine that there's a hunger and it's, you know, it's flexing. That class is their year to flex.
If they're like at Auburn at the end of the year, and my Auburn thoughts have been detailed, will continue to be detailed, but they ain't losing that game if they've lost one before, right? Like if, let's say that, you know, at Texas A&M, let's say Jimbo gets them, right? Let's say Texas A&M pulls off one of those kind of stunner games. Well, then I guarantee you that junior class is going to be laser focused and won't lose another game the rest of the season.
Well, yeah, but the number is 11.5, right?
Ooh, is it 11.5?
All right, what is the number?
I've got it at 11.
Oh, okay. Well, then good. Yeah, you're right. So even one loss, you still get a push. There's no, yeah, this is not a two-loss team.
Count them up!
The LSU Tigers coming off a season where I think some confidence was sort of really injected into the Ed Orgeron era. You know, he's 8 wins, 9 wins, and then you get the 10 wins last season thanks to the bowl victory against UCF. Really could have been 11. I feel like that 7 overtime game against Texas A&M deserves an asterisk that we should award both teams a win, because the football that was being played at the end of that game was not exactly football.
Yeah, that's yeah.
That was red.
Congratulations for playing.
Yeah, they were playing Red Rover or tug of war right by the end of that game. Like who can still stand up? Anyway, our over under win total for this season is set at 9. We got the game at Texas, which you and I will be at. Cover 3 will be on site in Austin. I got hotel booked. You thinking maybe a Saturday night podcast from our from the hotel again?
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a late beer podcast night for sure.
And and so as I'm looking at the rest of the schedule, you know, counting up to 9 was not hard for me to do.
That number is only at 9.
But getting to 10 is tough.
Yeah.
That's kind of where I'm at right now.
10, you're beating some really good teams.
Right.
That's the thing. So you have to account, like you have to decide if you think LSU's a really good team to get, like you can't just back into 10 wins. I agree with that. You have to decide, I think LSU's a really good team if you're going to pencil them in for 10 wins.
And not just that they're a really good team, but they're going to win multiple tough games against really good teams of equal or greater talent.
Yeah, and this is not a Bush League schedule here. I mean, they're at Texas. Utah State is one of the best Group of Five programs in the country. Even Georgia Southern traditionally is not a fun play. So this is not a schedule that just, you know, this is a Missouri schedule. I think last year, and then the win total was maybe like 9 again or 8.5 or something. And I think I was on the under last year. I think I had low expectations. And we were coming off a year where it was a little bit of a disappointing 9-3 in 2017. So 28, like where was the Ed Orgeron trajectory going to take us? And I think he surprised me to a degree last year. So I'm a little bit more bullish this year. And in fact, like I sort of stumbled into 11-1 and backed off it and sort of found another loss somewhere.
Right.
But so I'm at 10-2, but this is one of those teams where from a roster standpoint, from my perspective, when I look at the names and see, you know, and just sort of see what they can be, how talented they are. Dude, this roster is, I mean, this is a stacked team.
Rashard Lawrence, Kalavon Chasen, Michael Divinity, Christian Fulton, Grant Delpit are all players that could be first team all SEC defenders.
So Kalavon Chasen gets hurt first game last year, misses the season, balled out before he got hurt, had high expectations, and is a former five-star. And coming off that injury, his junior season, he gets number 18, the LSU sort of honorary team leader number, which tells me everything I need to know about what I should expect out of him this year.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So you got him coming back. You've got, the linebacking group is this loaded collection of Jacob Phillips and Patrick Queen and Michael Divinity, and you know what combination are they going to use with those guys? The secondary, Grant Delpit, we all know about, but Christian Fulton probably had a better year last year than Greedy Williams.
I agree.
And now you got Derek Stingley coming in as a true freshman that's is apparently just been an absolute terror on the field ever since he stepped on foot and during bowl practice. You got four offensive linemen coming back. You got an absolutely loaded receiving core. You got Joe Burrow, who is not flashy necessarily, but probably the most competent, a step up in competency from Danny Etling, the newly anointed wide receiver for the New England Patriots. And the running back group is really is good, is better than last year as they sort of took a step back there. And now you got Joe Brady coming in, who's bringing in the Joe Moorhead RPO stuff to add to the equation. And you got the $2.5 million coordinator, Dave Aranda. You kind of keep on listing off pros and cons of LSU. The pros list gets pretty long. The cons list isn't super deep. So that 9.5 to, or that 9 number, I'll take the over on that. I think this is one of the first ones in a while I've felt sort of, that it's not just sort of a push to one side or the other. But I'm gonna go ahead and just sit on that over.
This is a great season for LSU if they are able to capitalize on Death Valley being a home field advantage, because Florida, that's going to be in Death Valley. That's homecoming. Auburn, that's going to be in Death Valley. Texas A&M, that's going to be in Death Valley. To me, those are the three games along with the game at Texas. So let's say those four games, those are the ones that are going to determine this win total, because 8-4 is not out of the realm of possibility. You could, LSU could go 1-3 in that stretch of those games that I just mentioned. You throw in the Alabama loss, that's 8-4. They go 2-2, throw in the Alabama game. Now all of a sudden we're at the push. You got to go 3-1 against the likes of Florida, Auburn, Texas A&M, and Texas, but you got three of those games at home. If they defend Baton Rouge, boy, this sounds like a old war story. I tell you what, if LSU goes and if they can defend Baton Rouge, well, then they will hit 10 wins. That is a great, great place to be in. I think if you're Ed Orgeron and if you're this LSU staff, and I do think there's a lot of confidence coming from, you mentioned the competence. I thought you were going to say confidence because Joe Burrow is sneaky swaggy.
Oh, he was, Jacob Phillips was in Nashville this spring for, or it was maybe early summer or spring, either way, he was in town, and there's like a, cause he's from Nashville originally. And there's this camp where a lot of his sort of trainers were out, former trainers were out. So he was out hanging around, and I was just talking to him, and I was like, so what about your boy Joe Burrow? And he kind of got this smile and looked over at me, and he was like, he's a stone cold killer. And like, or he was, I can't, or maybe he said like he's an assassin or something, but like, it was a very, like, Joe Burrow has the confidence of the team.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, I think they like playing for that guy, and I think they like his, I think they like his just attitude and swagger. Like, I think they, he's got that, and confidence and grit and edge, whatever you want to call it. So that's a, he's an LSU type of quarterback, and they've been missing that for, for a lot of these years. They've missed a guy that really can go and be that lightning rod for the team. So I think that adds confidence. And then when you just, again, and I go back to Dave Aranda and all the diverse athletes he's got and all the different, I think, ways he's going to be able to use them creatively on the defensive side of the ball. I just think this is going to be a really, really good unit.
Count them up!
Joe Moorhead, the words, Joe Moorhead, I think the words we use to describe him as he's entering year two at Mississippi State, the takeaways from SEC Media Days, I believe, didn't you make this observation? Do you say that he came a little bit more humbled, a little bit more like understated compared to maybe compared to the way he arrived at SEC Media Days the year before? They went 4-4 in conference play, finished tied for fourth in the division, 8-5 overall. There were highlights. The defense was able to lead the way in wins against Auburn and Texas A&M, but outside of that, You found the offense, which was supposed to be Joe Moorhead's calling card, really struggling to get points against the likes of Alabama, LSU, and Florida, as well as a loss to Kentucky. So as we're looking at an over-under win total, I'm seeing it right here at 8. Boy, we're just sitting here in push land with these SEC numbers. I'm not saying that. I'll go ahead and throw it. I've got this like push/under. If you're holding my feet to the fire, I think 7-5 is more likely than 9-3. But, a lot of that comes down to these toss-up games. So where are you at with Mississippi State?
I'm heavy on the push. To go over, then we got to talk about them beating the likes of someone like Auburn, LSU, Texas A&M, or Alabama. I mean, the push basically is them winning all the games they're supposed to win, losing all the games they're supposed to lose. And I feel like they are, like, we have more confidence in them being a step below the games they're supposed to, the teams they're supposed to lose to, than we do them being a step above the teams they're supposed to beat. Does that make sense?
I have a potential of 4 straight losses at Auburn, at Tennessee, LSU, at Texas A&M.
Sure. I think that's conceivable.
That kind of stretch is just going to have me bouncing way away from even considering a 9-3 season.
Yeah, I think 9-3 takes some cojones to make that pick. This team, like, if they're 9-3, then we're going to have a very different opinion of Joe Moorhead at the end of this year. Because that will mean that the Joe Moorhead, like this, the idea of Joe Moorhead as the offensive guru will have taken shape once again, because that was what they were missing last year. And I think there were two problems last year. One, the receivers were not good at all. Like, it was a bad receiving core. Two, Nick Fitzgerald, Joe Moorhead's offense is more of an RPO, quick decisions, downfield passing game offense. And I think what Dan Mullen has shown is that he is, he can work with a grinder, athletic quarterback and sort of use those legs, use the quarterback run game as a real you know.
Oh, heck yeah, dude. Part. He's from the urban school. Love that quarterback power.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now we got Tommy Stevens coming in. And by the way, you know, there's Vegas odds out there of quarterback competitions. Throw all the money at Tommy Stevens. All of it. There's no way he's not winning this job. Tommy Stevens left Penn State, where he probably would have still been the starter, to come play for Joe Moorhead. He ain't coming to play for Joe Moorhead to sit the bench when he just sat 4 years waiting his turn at Penn State. No chance Tommy Stevens is not the starter. So wherever you can find that, those starting quarterback odds, eat it up. Tommy Stevens.
Keaton Thompson's a good player, though.
I'm not saying he's not. I'm just saying like Tommy Stevens did not come to Mississippi State without like a wink and a nod that competition here, but you're getting it.
Right.
Because he passed up he passed up a starting job at Penn State. So Tommy Stevens is a quarterback. He's going to be better than Nick Fitzgerald at running Joe Moorhead's offense. Is he dramatically better? I don't know. Kylin Hill, as a junior, will be one of the best running backs in the country. I think their offensive line is probably still going to be pretty good. And I think defensively, they're going to be so much better than people realize. I know they lost 3 first-rounders, but I really think the defensive edge guys, Marquis Spencer, Chauncey Rivers, are going to be really good. Their linebacking group is stacked. Cam Dantzler at cornerback, All-American type of talent. So there's players. But ultimately, it's about, does the defense take a big step back and the offense take a big step forward, or does one of those two surprise us, disappoint us, and they don't meet in the middle? So I'm going push to under, and I'm fascinated at what the narrative will be on Joe Moorhead after this season.
So where are your losses?
I got the ones that they're supposed to lose to. I got them losing to Auburn, LSU, A&M, and Alabama. You know, maybe if that A&M game is at home and not on the road, you know, I could flip that one. But I'm not sure they're going to go to Kyle Field and win that game.
Coming up on the other side, we will be taking a look at Auburn, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, and Arkansas as we wrap up the SEC West. Next.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, Barton. The Auburn.
We're finally here.
We're finally here.
Nice.
The Auburn number is set at 8. What? I'm over. You could move this to 8.5. I would take it over. You could move this to 9. I would take it over. If you put this at 9.5 and I had to put a significant amount of money down, I would take the over anyway.
Oh, man. Oh, wow.
I will admit that was for performance, but over under win total set at 8. We've got, I mean, the schedule is really tough. Oregon in Arlington to start, at Texas A&M, at Florida, at LSU. And then, of course, you finish with Georgia and Alabama. Both those games, though, in Jordan-Hare Stadium. What's your pick? What's your final rule in here?
I'm on the over. So I do, I've gone, let me give you the visual here. So on my Auburn schedule, and I mark all these in my Phil Steele magazine here, just kind of as my one-stop shop to keep up with where all my predictions are. And on my Auburn schedule, more so than any other schedule I've filled out, there is a lot of cross out the first guess and put a second one in. Like, there's a lot of games where I switch from win to loss and loss to win, and because I just think this is a team that is, there could be so many twists and turns in this season. I mean, there's the Oregon toss-up, there's the at A&M toss-up, Mississippi State, we can't just sort of overlook, there's that Florida toss-up. Like, we're talking about all these sort of Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Missouri's, or these like ACC teams where there's all these toss-up games. Auburn is like a team that has a lot of toss-up games with top-tier teams. Like, they're top of the food chain with 50-50 games all over the place. So that's really hard to figure out where it's going to land. Like, I got, you know, they could go and win 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They could go 6-0. And then I could see them losing to Arkansas. It's just sort of overlooking, you know, Arkansas as they go to LSU.
Sure.
So I'm on the over. I've gotten to the over. There was one version of the schedule where I had them 10-2. There was one version of the schedule where I had them at 8-4. I've landed on 9-3. And that 9-3 includes an upset of Georgia. It includes a win at LSU. It includes a loss at Texas A&M, a loss against Alabama, and an upset loss at Arkansas. So I know that's, like, again, that's just me sort of being wild and, like, picking the craziness. But the bottom line for this Auburn team is it's going to be great on the defensive line. It's going to be one of the best defenses Gus Malzahn's had. Offensive line is returns everyone. Run game is sort of reinvigorated. Gus Malzahn has the offense back. He has a mobile quarterback. Doesn't really matter that he's a freshman, because Gus Malzahn's better off with an inexperienced mobile quarterback than he is with an experienced passing quarterback. So it's just Gus Malzahn being able to sort of be comfortable in his own skin again. And it's going to be ugly sometimes, but they're going to figure out a way to win a lot of these games.
I feel like the way that I imagine this playing out probably includes both Joey Gatewood and Bo Nix at different points. And I don't know whether it's going to be because of performance or injury, or if he's just going to, like, I don't know if we're going to have one quarterback that we feel like is the heart and soul of this team, because the heart and soul of this team is going to be Derek Brown and Marlon Davidson and Nick Coe. And it is going to be a matter of, the Auburn defense is going to keep Auburn in every single game, and the Tigers are just always going to need, like, one drive. You know, they're just going to need, like, one touchdown drive to be able to gain the leverage they need to win. And I believe that there will be enough mixing and mashing and cooking up some weird trick plays in the chemistry lab for Gus Malzahn. Like, I could see specialized packages, and I could see the quarterback, how Gus handles the quarterbacks, being the most, like, over talked about, over discussed topic around Auburn football throughout the season. A lot of hand wringing when, like, the like real secret of it all is the defense is so good that he does just get to play around a little bit.
And I also think Gus, like, maybe if the freshman quarterback was Jarrett Stidham or some other pass-happy quarterback, maybe it would be a little more concerning that it's a freshman or a redshirt freshman. But I think given – and Bo Nix is less of a – I mean, you know, Joey Gatewood is almost like a Wildcat quarterback. And that's okay at Auburn.
That's fine.
Like, all he's got to do, all he has to be able to do is throw the play-action post. Like, if he's got that throw in his repertoire, then it doesn't even matter. And they're just gonna get back to just running the rock and being this power spread team or power no huddle team, and I think that, I mean, that fits what Gus Malzahn wants to do. Like, I was looking, this Oregon game is an example of me overthinking it a little bit. I've switched back to thinking Auburn wins this game because Oregon can sort of pound their chest and talk about being the best offensive line in the country all they want. But ultimately, they're still coming to play an elite SEC defensive line. Those matchups typically don't go that well, Pac-12 against SEC defensive line and an elite one. And so, yes, Justin Herbert is the advantage at the quarterback position, but I think Gus Malzahn is pretty good at especially in games like this, these national games where he's got to figure out a way to make them close and ugly. He's pretty good at minimizing whatever offensive deficiencies he's got and just making it a defensive game. So I got them winning that one, which is sort of the key to flipping me from 8 to 9 wins. And that's kind of where I've landed right now.
Where do you think, and it probably doesn't matter, you know, I asked this question after, you know, stating earlier either on this podcast or elsewhere that the, you know, who is running the ball at running back is something that I'm putting a little bit less stock in at the college level. The idea that there are very few, like there's a lot of players that are really, really good, but that the like individual running back that's going to elevate your whole offense, I look at this room and I don't have horrible feelings about any combination of Jartavius Whitlow, Cam Martin, and Sean Shivers. I feel like they were bouncing between them a little bit because of injuries and a little bit because of how much the coaches trusted them. Like I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing that there's not one player that I'm looking at and I'm like, oh yeah, he's ready to go, because we've seen what was it when Auburn won? Why am I blanking on his name? When Auburn won the SEC.
Kerryon Johnson.
Yeah, Kerryon Johnson just put the whole team on his back. I'm very curious to see how that plays out as well.
Well, I think Whitlow can be the workhorse.
Okay.
He's sturdy, he's physical, he's compact. I think he can be the workhorse. And then you got Sean Shivers, who's this like speed scat, like change of pace guy. And Cam Martin is sort of that guy too. So I think he has the diversity from a skill set standpoint that you need. You know, Kerryon Johnson could kind of be all those things in some way. So I think he's got the diversity to mix it up. And I think that he has the, you know, I think Whitlow has the sort of durability to be the workhorse if he needs to be. So I feel pretty good about the run game this year. And I think given who the quarterback is going to be, I think pass game deficiencies are less, you know, that's less of a factor to me.
Count them up!
Jimbo Fisher entering year two with Texas A&M. I would say that year one, anecdotally, just thinking about it, I feel like it felt like a success. You know, they came out, they ended up with 9 wins. They finished 5-3 in conference play, you know, over 500 record in conference play. Never really looked like totally outclassed. They certainly took a big loss on the scoreboard, 45-23 to Alabama, but you know, Kellen Mond showed some development. And then the other piece of, as always, when a new coach, especially one by the name of Jimbo Fisher, comes in, then you see some improved results on the recruiting trail. So as we enter this year, I was a little bit surprised to see that the win total, as I'm looking at it, is set at 7.5. But that's also probably because they have one of the toughest schedules in the country. In addition to the brutal draw of the SEC West, they go at Clemson the second week of the season, and then they go at Georgia, drawing the Bulldogs on rotation from the SEC East November 23rd. Man, the to finish the year at Georgia, at LSU, is really, really tough. But 7.5 feels really, really low. Where are you at with the Aggies?
Yeah, there, you can make an argument that Texas A&M plays the four best teams in the country, three of them on the road. So that's tricky. That's pretty tricky. Because of that, I've got them at 8-4. What was our number here?
7.5.
Okay, so I've got them over. I'm kind of glad that I've got the opportunity to play the over here, because I do think that they'll be an improved team. I think the sort of pivot point to this season, like the things that it hinges on to me, are, does Kellen Mond, and I put him in a similar boat to Felipe Franks in Florida, but does Kellen Mond make, I don't want to say an unexpected jump, but a take his game to a level we haven't seen yet under a second year of guidance under Jimbo Fisher? And if that happens, and if he suddenly is sort of one of these, the best quarterbacks in the country, and I've seen people throw his name out there, maybe Barrett picked him as like a value Heisman pick. I don't hate that. And so is Kellen Mond that guy? Because they still have these avatars on the outside at receiver. They have these big body guys, Kendrick Rogers, Jamon Osmond, these dudes who can muscle around and be mismatch problems. And I think they'll be able to, with an improved advanced Kellen Mond, that can be tricky to defend. I think the other side of it is defensively, is the defensive line this nationally elite unit? Because it seems like they're going to be really improved. Bobby Brown, Justin Matabuki, those guys are really good. Can like DeMarvin Leal come in as a true freshman and make a big splash at defensive end? Like, there's a lot to like in the development of the defense, I think. But is it like this looks like we're 1 year away from being an elite national, like, you better have your freaking pad strapped on tight when you're playing Texas A&M, because you're gonna get hit in the mouth every play. Like, they look like they're maybe a year away from that kind of a unit. Are they ahead of schedule this year? Is this year the year that shines through? If it is, and if Kellen Mond's the next level guy, then hey, maybe this is 10-2. Maybe this is. But I think the schedule here, the itinerary for A&M is like another 8-4, 9-3, 7-5 range, and then next year is when we start really heaping some expectations on their plate.
I'm on the under, but it is an under where I'm like 6-6. Don't see that happening at all unless there's severe injury issues, bottom falls out, something goes horribly sideways for the Aggies. I think it's a 9-3 team that's going to finish 7-5, and a lot of some of it is my math catching up to me, where if I'm going to be if I'm going to be all in on LSU, if I've got these wins for Georgia, if I've got this win for Auburn, and you got this Alabama game, you got this Clemson game, all of a sudden you're like, oh crap, that's five losses, and those are games that I can't really reverse. So 9-3 team with a 7-5 record, but that doesn't mean, I think that almost sets up that I probably love that for next year's win totals, right? Like, for Texas A&M to be building towards something great, to be, as you said, 1 year away, but then the schedule is just so tough, and so unfortunate for their draw that they end up with only 7 wins this year. I feel like that's the perfect setup to come in on the other side, and you just label Texas A&M as your dark horse for 2020.
You better hope they lose both of those end of the year games, because if they steal one of those, or even if they look really good, they're going to be a trendy team next year, and you may not get a lot of value out of that number preseason. But But yeah, I could see 7-5. I could see 8-4, and I think 9-3 is in the realm of possibility. But I ultimately think they become the most nationally relevant in 2020, not 2019.
How many games are gonna win this fall?
The Ole Miss Rebels with year 3 under Matt Luke. They've got a win total here. As I'm looking at it, we're setting it at 5. 5 wins. And to me, the big swing game as you're looking at the schedule, non-con, they catch New Mexico State. They start at Memphis, Southeastern Louisiana, but it is welcoming Cal to Oxford on September 21st. Where going up against that Cal team where we know we're going to have a great defense and a figure-it-out offense, however that ends up going as Matt Corral takes on that group, that could end up making the difference on whether or not this is a team that finishes with 6 wins. How are you looking at the Rebels going into 2019?
What did you say our number is here?
5.
I'm a hard under.
Hard under.
At 5. Yeah. Yeah, they'll get Southeast Louisiana, they'll get New Mexico State. I bet you Memphis beats them. I bet you Cal beats them. Can they get Arkansas? Maybe. And I don't see a whole lot of. I just don't see a lot of wins. The idea, like, they went 5-7 last year with NFL talent everywhere, on offense at least. You know, I know they returned 10 guys on defense, but it wasn't a very good defense. I know they've got a couple head coaches as their coordinators now. I don't know that there's no guarantee to me that that's a recipe for success. I mean, clearly those guys can coach, but there's no guarantee to me that this all works. You know, 3 head coaches in the kitchen. And I don't have faith in this offense, and I've seen the way they've recruited the last couple of years, and it's been admirable, but because they've had the cards stacked against them a little bit. But I think this roster in particular reflects like the recruiting class maybe 2 years ago, where they were really had the card stacked against them and wasn't a great class. And so I just think this is a team that's going to be, I think it's the worst team in the SEC. I'll put it that way.
Wow. Okay. I'm willing to give them, say that, you know, Rich Rod cooks up something special. Maybe they do get the best of Memphis. I'm willing to say that Arkansas is a top. I'm willing to say that basically there are 4 winnable games here at the beginning of the season, but then after that, all I've got is New Mexico State. And just because I called them 4 winnable does not mean that I'm willing to pencil them in as wins. So I too am on the under, but I see it as more of a 4-8 under rather than the potential of 2-10, which is what it sounds like from you.
I've got them at 3-9. So I get them some wins in there. I got them beating Arkansas, New Mexico State, and Southeast Louisiana, and they could easily get to 4. Like, there's enough toss-ups in there to where they get to 4. And I'm not even saying that 5, they can't get to 5. I mean, they could. I just, if we're saying now to get hit an over, they got to get to 6 in a bowl. I don't know why a 5-7 team. I don't know why last year's 5-7 roster. You know, let me put it this way. How could this roster do something last year's 5-7 roster couldn't? I don't see that. And if we're counting on this defense, man, Mike McIntyre deserves a raise. He's a million-dollar coordinator already. He deserves more than that if they're going to turn this defense around in 1 year.
Do you mind if I roll out some reckless speculation here at the 47-minute mark of the SEC West win totals?
Is it interim head coach speculation?
No. That you want to start fading Ole Miss when it comes time for Rich Rod and Mike McIntyre to get their resumes together.
Yeah. And so that's going to be So when does that hit?
No, that like you want to fade them against the spread. I mean, they're not going to be favored against the likes of Auburn, LSU, and Mississippi State. But
yeah,
you know those if things go well early, there might be enough proof in the pudding for those two guys to feel like they can go get head coaching jobs, depending on what's going on elsewhere. I don't know. I could be wrong because I think we had like 1/5 of the Power Five coaches turned over this past year, and maybe it was like 33. I don't know for the all of FBS. I believe it was ultimately a pretty high number. So we might be due for a little bit less turnover. But when I see when you talk about the, you know, three head coaches in the kitchen, absolutely a concern from a, you know, game planning, who's got the voice, you know, this, that, or the other, how are they going to all interact with each other? But I think also with those two coaches in particular, they are probably hoping that this is going to get them right back to being head coaches. And it's reckless. Just let me float that out there as a potential principle that we'll be putting in play come November.
It's going to be pretty fascinating to see like how they, I mean, it seems as though this is going to be kind of your classic Rich Rod quarterback run, fast-paced offense.
I mean, I think that's good for Scotty Phillips.
It's great for Scotty Phillips, and Scotty Phillips is going to be a good player. You know what? I'm fascinated on the Matt Corral thing. Like this monster arm kid who is athletic, and he looks sharp in the spring game doing some of this RPO and quarterback run stuff. But he's also like an emotional guy. I mean, what was the game last year where he was like, you know, in the front of the, there was like a big fight and he was like in the front of the line trying to, you know, pulling his helmet off and getting in people's face. Like he's a fiery dude who is going to take some shots running the football. And he's a redshirt freshman. And, you know, what happens if he takes a bad shot and they got to go to the next guy on the line there? I think there's enough cracks in the foundation here to where it's hard to convince me that over is the safe play.
Count them up.
And wrapping up the SEC West, we've got the Arkansas Razorbacks. This is year two with Chad Morris. He gets Ben Hicks, the wildly productive quarterback from SMU, relinking with him here as the likely starter. Do we know that for sure?
Probably. No, I think Nick Starkle's still in the mix.
Nick Starkle's still in the mix, too. Former Texas A&M quarterback. The over-under win total that we're working with right here is for 5. Let's see. We always have the Missouri game. Who's their other SEC East? At Kentucky. Where are you at with the Razorbacks? About 5.
I ended up being more bullish on them than I expected. I got them 1, 2, 3. I got them at 5 wins, which I didn't expect to get to 5 wins when I sort of started the process with them. I think it helps that unlike Ole Miss, they've got a pretty manageable non-conference with Portland State, Colorado State, San Jose State, Western Kentucky. So that should be 4 wins right there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a bad – that there's an embarrassing one in there if they don't have 4 wins out of that group. And then can they get one more in the SEC to get to 5? I think they can.
What, Kentucky or Ole Miss? One of those two, probably?
Look, I do think that this is a team that, I mean, they, what was it last year? It was, you know, I know they faded against Mississippi State and Missouri, but, you know, this was the team that, like, played LSU really close. Like, it was a tie game, like, late in the game. They had one of the best offensive outbursts of the year against Alabama. It was a 7-point game against Texas A&M. So there were some moments there where this team really sort of rose up. And so I feel like they are capable, like I said, of an Auburn type of team who might be looking ahead to add LSU the next week. Maybe they could knock them off. You know, maybe they catch Texas A&M looking ahead. Who's Texas A&M play before them? They're bye week, but they got, you know, Bama not far on the horizon when they play Arkansas. So I think they could knock somebody off. I think they'll be improved at quarterback. They'll be improved year two in the system. They'll be improved at receiver. Trey Knox, true freshman, already making plays, is a big-bodied guy. Defensive line, I think, is pretty good. They've recruited pretty good there as well, which is a benefit and encouraging. So I just think there's some things to like here. They're still behind the rest of the SEC, but I've actually got Ole Miss beating them early in the year, but I think as the season progresses, I'm more confident in their ability to grow and progress than maybe I am with Ole Miss.
Well, where are you at with Chad Morris? Because I was tempted until I looked at the schedule, and as I was just trying to balance things out, I was like, I don't know. This was 2-10 a year ago. And Chad Morris, like, as a head coach, he's 16-33 as a head coach. And he's had, you know, being at SMU, particularly in the at that time as they're making their own transitions as a program, you know, conference realignment kind of threw them a little bit of a curveball. They found themselves in different spot. But, man, I think that Chad Morris has proven himself, certainly at the high school level, to be a great offensive mind as Clemson's offensive coordinator, to be a great offensive coach. But as a head coach, when you've got a 16-33 record, there's no pressure on Chad Morris right now, but I do think that I am stopping short of believing that he's a home run of a Power Five head football coach.
Well, here's my Chad Morris thing is there was a time when the tempo, we're going to play balls to the wall fast as hell, you know, and beat you with speed and pace. There was a time when that was uncommon and you were doing something different by taking that approach, and it made it really difficult to prepare for and to play against. My worry with Chad Morris is that is no longer a unique approach.
Right.
Like, everyone is playing with pace. Everyone's playing with tempo. So is Chad Morris, and has Chad Morris found a way to evolve playing complementary football and sort of doing what it takes to win? Or is he just sort of programmed old ball coach style to just, you know, this is the way I've always done it. It's going to start working. And it's too early to tell, like, the returns at Arkansas. I do think the offense will be better. Does an improved offense start to lead to a regression on defense? I don't know that we have, to your point, I don't know that we have necessarily like a body of work to indicate Chad Morris is a – we know he can coach offense. Is he a great coach at winning football games?
I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's fair to say that.
And that's why I was like coming in feeling under, but then the schedule that you point out has me like, well, there's four wins, and you know, can they get one conference win, whether it's against Ole Miss or whether it's just catching somebody sleeping? Yeah, absolutely. So I'm landing at a push. I'm probably a push to under when you're holding my feet to the fire. But you know what? Like, would not be like it would be a reversal of my hunch, but not surprising. So, like, I would change my mind, but I would not be surprised that I changed my mind if this Arkansas team at the end of the year, maybe they knock off Missouri and they end up going 6-6, and it's just like a big breakthrough moment. That would impress me in a way that would be formative in terms of me drawing my opinions on Chad Morris.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope this isn't a cop-out comment, but I do feel like Arkansas is the type of team that, you know, with the exception of maybe Alabama, you know, this is the type of team that nothing would surprise me in terms of like a one game, one Saturday pulling an upset.
Well, you mentioned it. There was the close game against Texas A&M, close game against LSU. Like, that, it is already in this team's DNA to be competitive against the best teams in their division.
Yeah.
So, And the other thing about Chad Morris, like, even going back to Clemson, like, you take another look back and you're like, oh yeah, it was Sammy Watkins, DeAndre Hopkins, and Andre Ellington. That's easy to play with.
Right. Right. And he's, you know, and they don't have to be those guys, but, you know, as Trey Knox and Treylon Burks, you know, as incoming freshmen, like, are they the sort of junior version of those guys? And is that enough to get to six wins? I mean, that's ultimately what we're asking. I'm not there yet, but it's in the realm of possibility.
Love it. He is Barton Simmons. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We'll be back at the end of the week with our first camp buzz, plus talking Notre Dame's win total and some of the highlights from the group of five. Barton, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.